welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, it is now or never, and I hope you understand the full context of the fact that we are losing time. And so getting you hot, if you're not ready, and one of the things we're doing right now regarding these petitions is we're trying to create a little PowerPoint or some basic graphics of some really short, succinct words that you can put on your table for getting people to sign the petition to removing the Biden administration by having your attorney general adjoin this lawsuit. Bottom line, what we want to do is we want to give you all of the tools as you can hit the ground running, America, in the next weekend. And then, you know, get out there and start collecting signatures and get this started in your county. This becomes your, I'll just say, your initiator. This actually creates the initiatory movement in getting people to join with you in taking the fight to government. And we're starting at the local level. So the petition, all you have to do is change the name of your county and the state in this petition. Everything else is ready to go. It's almost as close to just add water type of recipe and bake. With no stirring, I mean, just add water. That's all you've got to do. Can we make it any simpler? I don't know if we can, but what we want to do is we want to get you to a point where you're out there doing this and you have some help, so it makes it easier for you to start creating your own petitions. So far as we've been going through these petitions, the petitions regarding all of these issues, right? This comprehensive listing of issues and matters for these upcoming campaigns in 2022 and on, that we start demanding all of our rights be restored. Well, so what we want you to do, because currently, as I, because I did actually count, we've come up to 33, and none of these 33 have anything to do with Biden and removing the Biden administration. This is all 33 of these petitions are directly regarding, definitizing the Constitution, a Republican form of government, and restoring or reinforcing property rights. And we're still going through property rights. There's still a lot of things like common law, citizenship, so forth, that we have to start building upon. But I want you to understand that as we're doing this, we're on 21 pages. This thing has grown from just a few pages. If I go back to my very initial draft of this, this may have been 4 pages. The reason it's growing is all I'm doing is I'm adding some detailed arguments in bullet points to help you kind of understand how identity of a person and their information is private. This constitutional connection. This is why we kind of read the parts of the Constitution that actually establish this protection, this immunity. See, most people look at your rights, your privileges. So the 14th Amendment refers to two different things, privileges and immunities. The Constitution protects privileges and immunities. Well, so there are some things that are immunities, like the right in your person and those types of things. Some things are privileges, your right of speech, your right of assembly, your right of petition. So as we go through these things and we identify, as we were going into the reprisal, or actually, I want to say it right, because I tend to use the incorrect verbiage, when it basically states Congress shall have the power to declare war and grant letters of marque and reprisal. What that means is that they can act, only Congress has the power to basically say any ship flying this flag, doesn't matter who owns it, you can seize it, and you can bring it in for a reward. And then basically they confiscate, that's about confiscating property. This is the only place in the Constitution where the power to government in confiscating property exists. There is one part of the, what we'll call the amendments, where most people kind of forget about this, but if you actually, excuse me, if you actually look at the amendments and we go into the Bill of Rights and we actually, I think it's quartering, right? I believe it's the Third Amendment. No, it is not the Third Amendment. The Fourth, the Militia Free State. Nope. Oh, here it is. It's the Fifth. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in any time of war, but in a manner be prescribed by law. And when I say the Fifth, this is the Fifth of Madison's. This is the Third Amendment of the Bill of Rights that you know by. But that right there basically states that only during the time of war can they, by law, prescribe how they can confiscate your home for the use of quartering soldiers to help prosecute the war. So in other words, you know, there has to be an act of war declared before they can even put on the table the ability to, you know, to defend and prosecute a war. But if the war here is not here in America, then they don't have the ability to actually say we're going to have to, you know, do this. This is only in the case that the war, the battle lines happen to be where your home and your property is. And you got to hope and pray if we ever have a war that, you know, that battle line never comes to your property. That's why we're supposed to actually be parts of the militia and so forth. And we get our butts out. We go to other people's property to protect it. So it's kind of like firefighting. You go into the mountains to fight that fire so it doesn't work its way to destroying, you know, your house, your property, your town, and everybody else's. We have to work together. This is the beauty of a constitutional republic where the citizens are in charge. We have this, these obligations, but we also have the powers and the privileges of doing these things. Everywhere else, I mean, government can choose whether they're going, well, we don't like those people in that neighborhood. And we've actually seen that. Do you remember when they actually dropped bombs in Philadelphia? The government actually destroyed all of these houses in Philadelphia by bombing them from a helicopter? It was like in the early 80s. I barely remember this because I was in the Marine Corps, and at that point in time, the news, you know, wasn't an all-day cycle or what have you. So getting all of the facts, because I didn't live in that area, I don't understand it. But I do know the government had no business doing it. And at a local level, are you kidding me? The fact that we're in this situation? So folks, what does it take? What is it going to take to get you involved? What does it take to actually bring you to the table and become a participant in fighting for your liberties? So we're at a point now where we actually have hit the 998th episode. And if you remember yesterday in my previous episode, we had Maggie barking, barking, barking. So when Maggie is, you know, out of the area of the house, so we have a door that keeps her out of, you know, the area by the studio. And, you know, I'm probably giving you way too much information here, but it's funny, you know, she's a bulldog, so she doesn't have the ability to get up there and turn the doorknob, but she does have the ability to kind of, you know, lean in and push, and she has been known to actually open doors, and just by, you know, and she actually opened the door, so she knew where I was, and she wanted to get out there because she wanted a treat. And so when the show was over, I went out there and I gave her a treat and put her in the part of the house so that she could bother me no more. And when she, you know, when she can't get to me, she just sleeps. But if she can get to me and she wants a treat, she knows that all she has to do is just bark, bark. And folks, I don't know if you've ever seen a bulldog that wants something, but they'll just bark, bark, bark. And she'll bark for hours just until she gets what she wants. And they're that stubborn. But I will tell you that they're very well disciplined in not doing certain things. Like, this just amazes me, and I'll just share this, and then we'll move on with the show. I've yet to see a breed that will not go into the trash or go into an area. When you tell them this area is off limits, when you basically, you know, show them that they can't go into this area, that you do not want them in the kitchen. The kitchen is a no-go spot. And you teach them this, then they will not go into the kitchen. Even when we leave and even when we're gone for a long period of time, it's actually happened where, you know, we go, you know, our first bulldog, Miles, you know, he had to have been hungry. He had to have, you know, gotten into the kitchen, gotten into the trash, and probably, you know, just to, you know, because he didn't know when his meal was coming. You know, he was starving because we ended up getting caught into an accident situation where we couldn't get home. And it took us an extra day to get there. You know, the water bowl was empty. We didn't have anybody to contact, but you know, he was okay. He was inside the house, but the fact is he would die before he goes into that kitchen to actually eat the trash. He was already at a point where he would have done that. And to just prove this, I used to put Cheetos on the floor just to see if he would go in to eat a Cheeto off of the, because he loves Cheetos. Miles did. Miles has passed a long time ago. But anyway, he would actually, you know, go in to eat a Cheeto off the floor, and we would no, you can't do that. And then when he sees those Cheetos and he doesn't get any, then we reward him for not going in there. And that's how, you know, that's how you kind of train them to not to do things or go in areas or what have you. Anyway, long story short, you know, when they do want something and they know that this is something that they can have, then they are just incessant. I mean, it's just on and on and on with Maggie. Gimme, 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 gimme. Anyway, we're going to go through the obligatories, and then we're going to get right back into the Bill of Rights or this comprehensive listing, because we've got a lot to cover, and we need to get this done so that we can get into the ratification phase. So please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle is covering, it's a monthly periodical for the state of Wyoming, kind of covering the what they call the conservative issues. And so the reason I'm highly promoting this is because this type of effort needs to be done by people that might be in a position to do this. I have seen some of these efforts in the past before move forward in a commercial aspect. When you find somebody that's actually doing something like this, you need to become a subscriber. We're a subscriber. You need to be a subscriber. And we ask that all people subscribe to these. And as you start, if you create your own chronicle, your own constitutional chronicle for your state, then let us know. We will be happy to plug them. And what we want to do is that we actually start listing these things on our website so that, you know, you can actually start pulling these things in. Because I honestly believe people need good news. They need to hear what people are doing and how we're fighting the good fight. And this is good news. Anyway, if you're looking or ready for your financial future to stabilize it and become independent, give Gary Smith at Fortitude Financial Coaching a call. He will help you, and he actually understands what he needs to do. He's been fully trained through the Dave Ramsey certification process. Give Gary a call. He is an awesome coach, and I have the highest respect and regard for this man. In addition, the one plug that we love doing as well is for Timber Nation and their hardwood furniture. Everybody needs furniture. Everybody loves hardwood. Check out Timber Nation, and it may be simple, but when it comes down to it, when you talk about a 2-inch thick piece of hardwood for a surface for a desk or what have you, that far exceeds your typical 1 inch or 3/4 or 1.5 inches. I mean, come on, 2 inches? That's a good solid surface. Anyway, if you want something specific, come up with a plan, send it to them. They're happy to do custom work. With that, we also want to let you know we've got a comment line, as we always remind you, 425-270-5416. Let's move forward with the content, because yesterday we were just wrapping up the petitions regarding personal property, right? And so we were looking at, and we were going into break when we were hitting or ending the show when we were covering the confiscation of personal property. Clearly, there is no constitutional standing for states to actually be able to confiscate property, that they can't actually say, you know, take these people's property or what have you with letters of marque and reprisal. Nor can they actually come along and just say, hey, just because you committed a crime, that you can be punished, because that goes to the extent of unusual, cruel and unusual punishment in the protection of the Eighth Amendment. Now, it's one thing if a family harbors, this is actually a family business where everybody is proven, but it's one thing if you got one person that goes, you know, off the deep end and becomes a really bad criminal, harms a lot of people. Well, the family, it's not like they were participants or they were, if there's no evidence that they were involved, they shouldn't be punished. Confiscating their property and hurting them is, it's unacceptable, folks. We can't be that kind of society. So anyway, one of the amendments that, or I should say petitions that we need to have, is we need to make sure that the laws of confiscation of property are repealed, and that there has to be hard evidence. Again, there has to be hard evidence that no one will lose the property because of their association, and so, you know, with the criminal or what have you, right? And so, as a matter of fact, I'm adding this. This is a petition that I didn't have in here. But what we want to do is we want to repeal the confiscation of property. And this is important, folks, because we do not believe that, you know, people should be punished because of somebody else's behavior. It's one thing to hold somebody fully accountable for what they do. But, and 9 times out of 10, you know, most people that have the most to lose, they typically don't commit crimes. But when they do, you just can't go and do a scorched earth and punish everybody that was associated with them that had nothing to do with the crimes. So we have to repeal this, and we actually have to, you know, kind of create some protections to ensure that innocent people aren't harmed through the punishment process. The next petition that needs to be done is we need no U.S. citizen can lose their personal property. So basically, we want to phrase it this way, that no citizen can lose any personal property of any type within the state to fraud or fraudulent act that has not been proven in a common law court of law where the owner themselves or that person losing the property was directly involved in the process of the act of fraud. Okay, so the next one, and I think I actually went through this yesterday, that one. The next one would be no resident of the state can be forced out of their home due to the inability to pay property tax. So we kind of have covered this on and on in many different ways, but it's just morally wrong for citizens to lose their home to taxation. It is just absolutely wrong. And we need to create processes that basically state that if you are limited income, if you're retired, or unable to work, then you cannot lose your property taxes. And what I'm also including in here, and this is, I've just come up with this. So this is a conscientious objection. And this is basically that we should be able to petition to not pay taxes for education and things we find immoral. Okay, so there you go, folks. We have the constitutional standing of using petitions. We also have the constitutional standing of, and I'll just say the force of law to apply our rights of conscience. And I believe that this is probably even more powerful. In addition to you removing your kids from homeschool, I believe we should be able to basically tell the state, you can't do this. And we should be able to actually use a conscientious objection to say, you cannot compel us by taxing our homes for education, for the education that you are doing. This is how they're waging wars against us. I've been telling you that in our taxes, we've been paying government to apply tyranny against us. This is absolutely wrong. And so I believe that this is one of those types of petitions that I'll probably be able to get Bob Schultz to take on and create a little boilerplate to actually start moving this forward, because this goes right up his alley. One of the things he's just a hardcore, we need to restore the consequences of, you know, the petition and government. And this goes right into the face of exactly what he's talking about. So currently, as we've covered up to the 11th page, and we're basically halfway through, and the rest of these pages are just bullet points. So I know I've got a lot of stuff to cover here, but we're at 35 petitions, folks. So why all of these petitions? Because if we don't go through the list of these petitions so that you understand how far out government has gotten from the principles of governing us, then this is the refresher course so that everybody understands how and what we need to do to restore our liberty and every facet of our liberty and what it takes to restore each of those facets of our liberty. If I didn't make sense, that's just because I'm making it up as I go along. Actually, the reality is this, folks, that all of these petitions become a laundry list. We want to make this as comprehensive as possible. This is why I'm working with the Constitution Association. I'm hoping to work with the IEP, the Constitution Party. Everybody that embraces the Constitution says that we have to do everything we can to restore all of these principles. I'm going through what it takes to do that because nobody else has done it. And I find it an honor and a privilege to be able to work with great minds in being able to find out what am I missing? Because clearly there are things that I'm missing, but as we go through and as we kind of sweep up and do the cleanup, or as we do the forensic audit of our daily lives and government's involvement in our daily lives, it starts becoming a very obvious, oh, well, you know, that's sore because they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. Or that's a mess. That stinks because they have no business doing it. And so I'll get past these metaphors and let's get into the identity of a person and their person's information. The Fourth Amendment is really clear. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. So when we say searches and seizures, it means collection as well. And so it would be equally entrapment if a government entity came up to you and said, hey, and asked you a bunch of questions. They should not have and should not be able to ask you a bunch of questions without actually reading you your rights and letting you know why they're collecting information on you. In other words, we actually have some, we have these rights of protection from government being hostile towards us, but it doesn't end there. So going on, the Fourth Amendment also says, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized so that they can actually have this information. So in other words, every bit of your identity, every bit of your person, and those types of things that make you, whether it be your digital footprint, your biometrics, we're going to get and drill into all of these in this portion so that you understand your rights from government and corporations. We'll be right back. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to just head on in to what we're talking about. And what I'm talking about is this personal property and actually your identity. Okay, so we're talking about, because your biometrics, and we've talked a lot about this, but your biometrics is so, so critical because it is a unique identifier. And we need to start looking at why does government need to have unique identifiers? More importantly, why do they need to have your DNA? Why do they need to have these biometrics? Well, it's one thing that they need to have it for crime and crime prosecution, but to actually have that information and use that for monitoring, in other words, without a reason to monitor you, when we look at the Fourth Amendment, and we look at the cameras being placed in China that have now been placed in Temecula, California, and other places around this republic, where they're creating monitoring systems with and using facial recognition technology, your biometrics, that type of stuff. And as they start tying and associating, you know, along with, you got to understand that they can start connecting databases and all of this immense data. They can have associated to you and your biometrics information, your shopping information, your recent purchases, every piece of activity that you have done that has been tracked via the banks and everything else. Government has no business having access to being able to connect all of those dots. The only way they can actually get those things is by following the Fourth Amendment. The problem is that corporations and businesses have changed. And so we have to start actually exposing what has changed and why, because in the past, government did not require access to that type of information. Why? Oh, well, because they're trying to make a more secure world and safer world. Remember what Benjamin Franklin said, you know, every time you surrender your liberties for safety, you actually get neither safety or liberty. And I'm paraphrasing, that's not what he said, but it's close to it. Bottom line, as we've gone through the Fourth Amendment, we want you to clearly understand what is happening. And so the intent of the 14th Amendment was to constrain government from having unattested access to a person's personal information. This was included in the relationships and associations with that person as well. I mean, you know, everybody kind of knows, and it's one thing for your sheriff to come up and talk to your neighbors to say, you know, hey, what's going on in pursuing a potential crime. But when it actually becomes a registered database with interconnections of all of your data, that becomes, as far as I'm concerned, a overreach of government's roles and responsibilities. It's one thing to prosecute crimes when crimes occur, but having precognitive abilities, or I should say, well, if you look at Minority Report, the movie Minority Report, a very, very powerful message gets sent, because when government has all of this information, and then they have this ability to, whether it's artificial intelligence or other means, and in Minority Report, it was these precognitives that actually, you know, were able to see people that were going to commit crimes, they'd go and arrest you before you committed the crime. I'm sorry. As bad and as reprehensible as it is when a person actually commits a crime, we cannot arrest somebody for not committing a crime because we believe that they would commit the crime. It's one thing to actually connect, you know, to catch them when they're committing a lesser crime. Like, if, you know, in the very beginning of the Minority Report, it shows this husband walking in on, you know, his wife having an affair with some person, some guy. I forget the details. But bottom line, they swoop in before he even shoots them or anything else. And basically, they try him for murder or attempted murder. Well, you know, let's just say that it should have been assault, because the crime, and actually, let's also look at what this was. In every state in the union, I believe still to this day, if a husband or wife walks in on their spouse and they are in the midst of a torrid act of, you know, an encounter with another partner in a marriage, consensual relationship type of act, you know what I'm saying, without saying the S-E-X, bottom line, it is legal in most every state as a crime of passion to shoot both of them. Now, I'm not telling people to take people's lives, but I am just telling you that that is considered justifiable homicide as an act of passion. And so how did we leap all of a sudden from saying that we won't even accept that? In other words, we're going to protect adultery. We're going to protect these types of, this to me is even more repugnant, that the society said we're going to protect sin because this one sin is unacceptable, but these other sins are okay. Seriously? this goes down that same path of, you know, homosexuality and adultery as well. How we, you know, have pandered to the homosexuals in allowing them to, you know, waive their the consequences of their choices and behavior to allow them to have families and so forth and so on. Anyway, I don't want to get into this downward spiral. Again, the intent was to constrain government from having unattested access to personal information. The government at any level was never, at any level, down to your local level, your county and or your city or town, was never intended to be able to monitor the activities of any individual or all individuals without having prior notice or authorization by the court to actually collect that information. And they had to be very specific. Just to be able to monitor people that, hey, this person we're looking for is out on the street because we're using facial recognition. I'm sorry, that is unconstitutional. I do not care whether, you know, that is a Osama bin Laden or a very, very bad person. Using this type of technology can easily be applied because once we allow it for this purpose and this purpose and this, it's one thing to actually have people out on the streets looking, law enforcement looking, but to use a carpeted or, you know, this umbrella search of all people using facial recognition technology is absolutely unacceptable. Unacceptable. There was an insufficient, and as a matter of fact, just to prove this, the activity of any individual without having prior notice or authorization by the court, you know, has only proven over the years that the even the court has been an insufficient safeguard, since the courts have proven that they too cannot be trusted to guard our constitutional rights. We have made a full circle when one looks at transparency in the relationship between people and its servants. The reverse of this was the intent and design by the framers, that we the people were to have full transparency of our government. Remember, it was to be for and by the consent of the governed, and what the federal government was doing was supposed to be available to the public at all, you know, at all levels. In other words, to the public scrutiny, we were supposed to be able to see and know what they were doing, at a minimum, the people's representatives. And when I say the people's representatives, that goes down to the state and your county. Your county representatives need to be able to have access to understand what the heck's going on because they have to account to you. Once again, we are a republican form of government, not an aristocracy where just a few people can. I mean, how many people have seen memes that associate the Clintons to owning the FBI? Or, you know, government has all of these controls, or the, you know, Obama controls all of these forces. Are you kidding me? They say, and there is a caveat for national security and the case of national security. And they use this umbrella of national security for this whole concept of, well, you know, for national security purposes, we won't tell you. That's unacceptable, folks. That is absolutely unacceptable. Now, I'm not saying that they have to tell us on the news, they have to tell everybody, but I do believe that they have a responsibility and state legislatures have a requirement to demand that they tell them. So state legislatures should be able to be read into national security levels. And this is where I go down this case of Snowden. I'll get to that, because states should not be excluded from national security matters under the compact. Under this thing we call the Constitution, states are the only parties to it. They possess the full oversight over all the activities of the general government for the people to ensure that they are strictly functioning within the enumerated boundaries of the Constitution. Had the states actually injected themselves into this national security to where they were being apprised, and it was actually, you know what? If you look at how many people, because they say, oh, well, the more people that know, the more likelihood that there will be this, you know, this surrendering or actually the leaking of information. The fact of the matter is, it's an leaking information is an ideological bent, because those people who are the leftists will, and this is proven, look at the Biden, look at how Trump had all of these leaks coming out of his White House administration. The people that were working there, that were a part of the Obama administration, and other people that were injected. I mean, the only people that leaked during the you know, this take back of our nation with conservatism, well, the communists kept on leaking information on him. Where are the leaks against Biden? I mean, Biden has created so much crap, there's no doubt in my mind he could easily be leaked out into the gutter and actually probably hanging at the end of a rope for treason, for not only his crimes before, but the crimes he's committing as a president, as an unconstitutionally seated president, I might add. But anyway, we're going to go into the break, and we're going to finish this little dialogue regarding identity and personal information after these two promos. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I can't emphasize enough, when it comes down to having oversight over the compact and over the federal government, we need to understand, because I've railed on this before, that the federal government has no power and or authority to create intelligence alliances with Britain or any other nation. That becomes an entanglement. And show me in the Constitution where they have the authority to create that type of military, or I should say intelligence alliance. Their only power is over commerce, not intelligence, not government, not warfare, not giving them warfare ability. For them to be able to give Ukraine actual war fighting equipment needs to be an amendment to the Constitution. They have this ability to create alliances. They do not have the ability to create welfare for states, to go down this path of actually buying off. And this goes right down the path of how, you know, the federal government has just become so out of control in manipulating and trying to control. I mean, the globalists and this communist revolution recognized that America could actually be one of the chief champions. And that's one of the reasons why the League of Nations from Wilson was first postulated as an American idea. The same thing with the UN. There was no way Russia or any other nation could have come out and led in pulling everybody in. It required somebody with deep pockets to be able to, you know, lure these smaller countries into subjugating themselves. And so this is why the majority of the funding that the UN receives from a single entity is the United States. We are the subsidies, or we're the entity that is subsidizing this global communist movement. And our federal government has been operating this facade and moving us in this direction all along. Folks, I can't make it any plainer. So when it comes down to states' oversights over intelligence and these types of things, had every state stepped up and actually asserted that they need to be apprised of all of these activities, they need to be able to come in and audit what every discipline of intelligence is doing, to have full disclosure and or shut each of these things down until they actually have that level of control. So what should have happened a long, long time ago is they should have created an apparatus at the state levels, at each state capital, of having what we call a SCIF. A SCIF is a sensitive compartmented information facility. And so this facility would allow them to have these comms necessary to be able to communicate, not just to the federal government, but to each and every state. Because the states need to be able to talk to each other about what their little contractor, their child, is doing. Got to remember the relationship here, folks. The states are the parents. The federal government is the child. And so as these SCIFs become established, anybody that is working for the government, whether they be in D.C., whether they be anywhere in the United States working like Snowden was in Hawaii, then that person that says, you know what, I feel we've crossed this boundary of constitutional ethics, violations, or what have you, then Snowden's obligation, because everybody would be trained that they would have to go to the state SCIF, basically go to the state house and say, I work in a classified environment and I need to disclose information to the representatives of the people of Hawaii. And when they do this, when they go in to disclose, had Snowden brought in what he was going to disclose to the world, and why did he take as much data as he did? Only shows that he was a narcissistic, treasonous bastard. I'm sorry, I almost said the word. Anyway, sometimes I lose control. Anyway, let's be very clear. The amount of data that he took was unnecessary. But what was important was that he would have a mechanism or a process to go in to report. And when a person walks into that SCIF, instantly they push a button. And what it does is it creates a recording, not there locally, but it creates a remote recording in every system SCIF across the republic. So in other words, all 50 states instantly are receiving and recording a communication of what's going on. Why do you do this? So that it's not just trusted in one state. Because the state of Virginia, because that's really close to the headquarters of the federal government, could easily become a shill for the federal government. But when you go to a state that you know there's just no way they're a shill, I mean, let's say Wyoming. You go into the state house of Wyoming and it becomes, you know, clear that the information that you divulge in that process will be out to every other state, that every state can actually now be apprised of the antics or what the federal government is doing, and going, hold on here, where did they get the authority to do this, to actually carpet, you know, vacuum all of this information regarding people's information, their phone calls, you know, what you're doing. They don't have this authority. And so this is where the states would then be able to pull back the federal government, say, sorry, you're operating outside the boundaries of the Constitution. You need to shut these agencies down. We're defunding you. And then you need to come back to us and tell us what you think you can do in protecting us from foreign enemies. And there is the need of having domestic, but not at the expense of liberty and the rights of the people. Got it? Okay, so there should have been a mechanism, and we need to have a mechanism in place. So believe me, there's going to be a great petition on this one particular issue right here. But as we move forward on, because I'm only covering the identity of a person and a person's information, and this is just one little small snippet. Okay, so furthermore, it is paramount to protect personal data such as DNA and biometrics from government access, especially from the government being, you know, the government at any level, because states must and have a duty to protect this information as well as keeping it from government exploitation and usage for tracking and monitoring purposes. So we, now that we're in this new age, we really need to have this conversation of, now we know all of these things of technicalities that the framers didn't know. How do we apply those same principles to ensure that our liberties are still secured from government? Because it's not liberties from each other, it's liberties from government. The general government possesses the constitutional role and responsibility to control all persons entering to the nation for immigration purposes only. They have the authority to control U.S. citizens leaving the country and returning. This does not give them the right to create national IDs or even regulate the standards of identification. It is states' responsibility to ensure that the general government has a sufficient sufficient data for what they need for this travel of persons and travel of persons only. But it's equally important that the states ensure that the federal government does not have databases, storing of data of the citizenry, nor access to the citizens' data for any purpose. In other words, when somebody travels, they basically, it should be, you know, a query of who is this person. I mean, it's one thing to have passports and minimizing the information, but having digital ID passports and those types of things for the ease, you know, just so you can simply go through in and out. I'm sorry, folks. I am sorry. If we as a society need to save and shave off a few minutes of our time to where we're willing to surrender our liberties, then those people need to move to a different nation. I'm serious. If you believe that your mighty dollar and your time is that more precious than your liberty, then you really need to live somewhere else, because I believe liberty is foremost and we have to protect the individual rights of all. It's that same premise that it is just dreadful to think that we send an innocent person to jail. We have to do everything we possibly can to ensure that beyond a reasonable doubt, no person is spending a night in jail that does not deserve to be there. It's better to have, what do they say? It's better to have 9 criminals go free than to send one innocent man to jail to be punished for a crime they never committed. So keep in mind that the only laws the federal government has the authority to enforce and define punishment of are treason, counterfeiting, crimes committed on the high seas, and crimes committed against the laws of nations. And that's it, folks. We haven't amended the Constitution. I mean, we amended the Constitution to control liquor, and so they could create those laws, but we repealed that. What other laws have we given them to basically get away with doing all the things that they've done? None. Folks, they are... We've been bamboozled into them actually, you know, running rickshaw over us. Now, I've got less than a minute to go through the petitions for all of this data and all this information. And so what we'll do is we're just going to reserve this so that you need to tune in tomorrow so that we can go through the petitions of what it's going to take to preserve your identity, your data, and keeping government in check so that they actually are serving us and not controlling us. Because we're rapidly going down this path of Big Brother and into a social credit system. You have to understand, folks, the framers in this constitutional republic was never designed to be that kind of government. And for us to stop the direction we're going and to get back to where we based on its design, we have to take action. It is now or never. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.